Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses and use my special link to sign up today. Hey fam, welcome back to the OCD Family Podcast. Today marks our fifth consecutive water cooler chat in 5 days. And honestly, this one might be my favorite because we're blending two of my passions, learning more about OCD and true crime. Holla! Fun fact fam, in my off time, I love watching trials and legal commentary. It's like this magical mashup of social justice meets hopefully legal justice meets mystery, plus some snarky lawyers with amazing lexicons. I mean, yes, please. So here's the deal. Following court cases has given me a real-time look at how evidence works in the legal system here in the US. Like, what's admissible? What's a stretch? And how do judges and juries figure out what actually happened? Now, some of you might already see where I'm going with this, but if you're like, what now? What does this have to do with anything? Don't worry, I got you, fam. Just remember, this isn't therapy. It's also not legal commentary. It's just the fam, chatting OCD, trials. So let's connect the dots. OCD and the legal system both deal with interpreting evidence through inferences, but they do it very differently. OCD relies heavily on possibility, like what might be true, even if there's no actual evidence. It adds in a heavy dose of distrust in self, especially around memory, intention, desire, even our own senses. And then it creates these irrelevant associations, like I thought something bad, so that must mean I'm bad, or I touched that doorknob, and now someone could get seriously hurt. That is inferential confusion in action, treating a worst-case scenario as if it's probable or even already true, just because it feels emotionally intense or morally uncomfortable. But in a courtroom, we have the standard of reasonable doubt. Sure, possibility gets a seat at the table, but it doesn't run the show. Reasonable doubt still asks, do we have direct evidence? Like something our five senses can verify? Can we use common sense or our internal sense data to corroborate these findings? Are the associations we're making relevant to the actual evidence, not just our fear of what could be? It's the difference between, oh, I could have run someone over and forgotten, which is OCD thinking, versus there's no damage to my car, there's no witnesses, there's no report, there's no body, and no memory of hitting anything. It's a fact-based review, case dismissed. So whether we're talking about a criminal trial or a mental loop, the goal is the same. We want to be able to focus on evidence that holds up, not just possibility that spirals down. Okay, so let's check this out in action. Here is an example from everyday life. Say you walk into your kitchen and you see a sink full of soapy water, a sponge on the counter, and your partner drying their hands with a towel. A reasonable inference is that your partner just finished washing the dishes. And why? Because we can observe the evidence. We have the soapy water, the sponge, the hand drying that marks conclusion or finality. And then we are filling in, we're inferring the conclusion based on a logical reasoning process. In a court case, if you have a witness that saw a defendant leave the scene of a burglary carrying a bag, surveillance footage confirming the timeline, and stolen items that were later found in that same bag in the defendant's possession, a reasonable inference is the defendant committed the burglary. Why? Because the inference is based on direct evidence, eyewitness testimony, video, physical proof, forming a relevant and logical conclusion. Now let's take that example where we walked into the kitchen and compare how OCD might twist it all around. Remember, we see a sink full of soapy water, a sponge on the counter, and your partner drying their hands? Well, imagine I have an image in my mind of what if I were to push my partner's head under the water and hold it there. Ooh, a shiver goes down your spine. You would never want to hurt your partner, but you reason that because you could imagine it, because you could see it in your head, that maybe you secretly want or desire to hurt them. Now, in the original example, we talked about how this was a reasoning process. And here, when it comes to OCD, we are still engaged in a reasoning process. Only this time, there is an over-reliance on the possibility that maybe we want to possibly harm, a distrust in ourselves that even though we believe we don't want to hurt our partner, maybe we could, and an irrelevant association that because I had an image or I had a thought, that must mean I'm capable or maybe secretly want or wish harm upon my partner. Instead of drawing a reasonable inference, I've made an irrelevant association, a conclusion. But as my law friends would likely point out, it assumes facts, not in evidence. Possibility gets a seat at the table, and OCD is making the argument, but it does not pass, corroborate, or meet the standard for direct evidence. And if it's not direct evidence, then we, the fact finders, cannot consider it. So again, an inference is a logical conclusion that is drawn from evidence and observations. And when it comes to OCD, it's fueled by the imagined possibilities. So if you're curious about learning more about inferential confusion, which we have learned from inference-based CBT is the mechanism within OCD, then you can jump on over to this episode's blog, where I will have links to different ICBT resources and expanded learning. I even have a whole animated water cooler chat from season one on the topic, so I'll link that on the blog as well. All right, fam. Thanks for letting me nerd out with you and combining my shared joy of supporting you and your loved ones with learning more about OCD and a little true crime time. Just remember, whether you're in a real court or the court of your own mind, let's keep pushing for fact-based thinking and watch out for those mental mistrials. Because the good news is we can tell OCD it's not our judge or our jury. Now that's my kind of justice. Therapists, ready to shape the future of pediatric OCD treatment? Join the Next Steps in Pediatric OCD on-demand course from Angela Adamson Springer, LCSW, and learn how to adapt inference-based cognitive behavioral therapy for kids. With research still emerging, this course empowers you to explore new methods and contribute to the growing field of evidence-based practices. With OCD Training School's 365-day access for on-demand courses, you'll gain practical tools to help kids by adapting ICBT's signature 12 modules to be as creative as the kiddos you're treating. So sign up at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses to support the podcast at no extra cost and support further growth and hope for our youngest of warriors.